Amen. Good to see you today. Boy, can you believe it? We're already coming up to Easter. I mean, this year has gone by so fast so far. You know, I'm sure you appreciated celebrating Women's History Month this last month. But it was weird. Like, they had a special holiday at the end of Women's History Month to celebrate people who pretend to be women. And I was just thinking, like, what if a Black History Month, the last day you celebrate people who pretend to be black, how would that go? But our president said the trans community represents the heart and soul of America, so awesome. I'm so glad that we're out of that. And by the way, it was appropriate that on the heels of all that, we hit April Fool's Day. So it's like, yeah, there you go. To me, April Fool's Day deserves, in our country today, it deserves more like a month at least to celebrate. But today is Palm Sunday. It starts the Holy Week, the last week of Jesus from when he came down on his triumphal entry to where he was crucified on Friday and rose again on Sunday. And so we always, this is one of the most special weeks for, you know, for people who follow Jesus. It's like it couldn't be more important. So today remembers the day when Jesus got on a donkey and rode down that road toward Jerusalem. The last week of his life, he went to Jerusalem, he met with his disciples, did some teaching, came back up the road and spent some time at the Garden of Gethsemane, and then he went down that road one more time when they took him to kill him. And so that reflects the week that we are in. Now, instead of just teaching on that Palm Sunday event, I wanted to take you back to the history of that road. And it involves our study in 2 Samuel that we've been studying. And so turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 19. If you remember 2 Samuel 18, you know, David's son Absalom had tried to overthrow him, chased him out of Jerusalem. He's out in the wilderness. And now Absalom had armies that he was bringing to try to kill his dad. And he wasn't very good at it. Absalom ends up getting killed. So David and Israel won the war, and now he can come back and be king again. But there's a problem. David loved his son Absalom so much. And we looked at that last week as he's mourning over the loss of his son who was trying to kill him. And he's mourning and just going, Absalom, my son Absalom, I would have been glad to die instead of you. Such a deep picture of the love that God has for his people, that in fact he sent his son to die for us. But you look at this, the depth of sadness that he had, and we talked about last Sunday, David's a man after God's heart because he reflected that as would the one called the son of David who identified with him, as we'll see. But so we come to chapter 19 and everything has come to a standstill. Absalom had lost. His guys were chased away or killed. The Jews under David had won. They had defeated Absalom. But now David's just still so depressed. He can't move forward. He can't even take a victory lap. He can't even go, okay, what do we do next? He's just devastated. And he's still just sitting there crying. Now, what I want to suggest to you is that there are times in our lives when we go through something and it just causes us to freeze. It just causes us to lock up. It causes us to put our life on hold. We become stuck. And we see this with David, but we also see how God led him to where he could then get back going and doing everything that he was called to do. And we get some clues as we look at how David did this and how this all worked out. And I'm hoping that they'll be applicable to us, to you, if maybe you're going through a time of loss. You know, maybe you've lost somebody that you love or lost a relationship or lost a job or feeling like other things are going downhill, or you're just like, I'm old or whatever. You feel like you're stuck. We see in David in chapter 19 some ideas as to a good way to move forward. Because if you don't move forward, you're done. We have to keep moving. That's the way life works. So look at chapter 19, beginning with verse 1. Joab, who was David's general, he was a tough dude. He was a guy that had killed Absalom, actually. He was told, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So David's like crying, and they should be taking a victory lap, and instead they're like, you know, it's kind of awkward. We can't really celebrate because David's just so depressed. And so the victory that day, verse 2, was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, the king is grieved for his son. So the people slunk back into the city. The king covered his face in verse 4, cried with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. And then Joab came into his house to talk to him. I don't know if you have a Joab in your life. If you don't have a Joab in your life, you better learn to do it to yourself. Because sometimes you need somebody to just slap you and, you know, like Maxwell Smart used to, thanks, I needed that. Or, you know, it's like you need somebody to tell you, this is real life here. You better wake up and move forward. And so Joab was that guy for David, and I appreciate it. David didn't always appreciate it. Later in the chapter, he fired him. But Joab came in and said, today, listen, what a bold guy. You have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and we had all died, you would have been really happy. It would have pleased you well. Now, therefore, arise, go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now. This will be the worst day of your life if you don't suck it up and get out there and be a man and talk to these people and encourage them, because they saved your life and the lives of all your people, and they saved your future. And, you know, ironically, they also saved the messianic line. So the king arose in verse 8 and sat in the gate. And they told all the people, saying, there's David. He looks fine. He's sitting there. So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent. Sometimes there's a moment where if you don't get it together right now, you're not going to get it together. Yes, you're grieving. Yes, life is tough. Yes, you've been hurt. And it's appropriate when you go through a loss to grieve. But it's important to know that all the life that you have left is ahead of you. And your ability to progress is dependent on whether or not you can get over whatever has happened up to this point. And you get out there and you do what you need to do. You use courage and conviction, because if not, you think you've lost everything, you're going to lose a lot more if you can't figure this out. If you don't figure that this is the way that life is, take responsibility. So, I mean, if you have somebody like that in your life who can talk to you like that, you're really lucky. You probably hate them, but you're really lucky. At the same time, if you don't, you better learn to give yourself this pep talk. Because if you're stuck, you need to get unstuck. Because life continues to move forward. And every moment, every day that you spend mourning what's in the past is a day that you don't spend moving into the future. And it becomes self-fulfilling and gets worse and worse and worse. So the first step for him to be unstuck is to realize, this isn't acceptable. I can't still do this. I need to pull it together. I need to move forward, because there's more at stake now than even what I've lost so far. And so he was blessed to have a guy like Joab who could do this for him. Joab had been with him from the beginning, had put his life on the line countless times. He also always got himself in trouble with David. As I said, a little bit later, David's like basically fires him. But then in the next chapter, he kills the guy that takes his place, and then he's the general from then on. Nobody really wants to take his job. But, you know, he told him the truth. And for every one of us, we need to understand This is it. How many times do you think Jesus, as he was going to die for us, felt like, I think I'll just stay here on the Mount of Transfiguration. I think I'll just stay here and just commune with my Father. But Jesus had a sense of, for this I was born and for this came I into the world. There's a reason why I'm here, and I am going to continue to pursue that which I'm called to do. And, you know, the disciples tried to keep him in the game and tried to encourage him. But it was when he went off to spend time with his Father that I think he really got that push, keep moving, keep going. You can't quit. Jesus was tempted in everything as we are, yet without sin, Hebrews says. So, was he ever tempted to quit? Better believe it. But he didn't quit. He took it and he continued to move forward even into that last week of his life. He did what he needed to do. Now, the next thing that we see in chapter 19 is that as the people saw that, oh good, David's out here, they began to gather around, and all the people in verse 9, they were fighting between the tribes of Israel, talking about how they were saved, and Absalom versus David. And David sent to Zadok in verse 11 and Abiathar the priest and said, speak to the elders of Israel, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the words of all Israel have come to the king to this very house? He goes, look, we need to get together. You are my brethren, verse 12. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then are you the last to bring back the king? And then he goes, tell Amasa he's going to become commander of the army continually in place of Joab. Not a great honor to take the place of Joab, but that's another story. So he swayed the hearts of all the men of Judah, just as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word to the king, return, you and all your servants. And then the king returned and came to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan. So once he understood, okay, I have business, I've got to pull it together, I've got to move forward. The next thing he does is gather the people who are closest to him, the people from Judah, the people from his tribe. He got his people together, and they began to encourage him, and he encouraged them. In your life, when you find yourself stuck, once you decide you're going to stop whining and being a baby and you're going to pull it together and do life, then you need to make sure that you surround yourself by people who support you. And that you support. Friendship is so important in life. Every research that there is says that if you have positive relationships in your life, it's the single most powerful factor for you living longer and being happy and enjoying life. Harvard has done a study, it's more than 90 years old now, that they follow these people through their lives. And that's the conclusion they came up with. There was another medical study recently that said people who have friends are like 70% more healthy and are likely to live longer than people who don't. So understanding that from what we know about people, then we go, okay, once you decide that you're going to stop feeling sorry for yourself, you need friends. You need relationships. You don't like need a million friends. And again, introverts, extroverts, an introvert doesn't always feel like they need friends, but an introvert needs friends as well. They may not be energized by having a bunch of friends around, but at the same time, like for David, who's an introvert, an important step was for him to get out there with his people and to be reminded of who he is and who they are, and he began to challenge them. It's one of the reasons why in our church we put such an emphasis on small groups. You know, we have small groups that discuss the message. We have our men's ministry that has men's groups. We have women's ministry with women's groups. We do everything that we can to let people connect. It's why the season classics have movies and game nights and all that kind of stuff. It's like, we want to do everything we can to connect you with each other. That's what the church is about, because that's what life is about. It's so important. You can't be friends with everyone, but at least if you're going to move forward, you need to know who your friends are. You need to have relationships. And again, these are healthy positive relationships, not people who drag you down. Sometimes you just need to distance yourself from certain people who suck the life out of you and find a way to be around people who give you life, who encourage you, who go, we're in this together. Now, if you go, I don't know, I'm all alone, I don't have any friend like that, that's probably because that's the way you are. So you better figure out, what do I need to do to make healthy connections with other people? Because you won't survive without that. And it's just vitally important. Almost everything that we do can be done better or worse based on whether or not we're connected to people or we aren't. And so David, right away, he comes out of his agony, he sucks it up, and then he's like, you guys are my people. Now as you begin to read as he crosses the Jordan, next thing is this guy Shimei comes along. You might remember him from earlier. Shimei was this weasel who was yelling insults at David, calling him names, throwing rocks, kicking dirt at him. And at the time, David's men wanted to kill the guy. And he's like, nah, don't worry. And so now this guy comes back, and now he's like, oh, you know, I was always your biggest fan. Like, what? And so then he's like bowing down, he's apologizing. I know I've sinned. I'm the first to come today. Abishai's like, can I kill him? And David goes, no, you know. He goes, no need to do that today. Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I am king of Israel? Look, I won, okay? I don't want to kill anybody right now. There's been enough killing that's taken place. Now, what that tells me, what it reminds me of as we move forward in life, when you're trying to get unstuck, you get your people, there are always going to be weasels. There are always going to be people out there who are taking cheap shots at you, saying hurtful things to you. In fact, you have memories of some of these people who have hurt you, and they're dead and you still haven't forgiven them because they're so in your head. And David's like, I am not going to give Shimei free rent in my head. If I killed him, that's like me making him important. So I wouldn't necessarily say that he forgave Shimei, but in the Bible, forgiveness really means to set something aside. So it doesn't mean that you go back the way it was before. It didn't mean that he's like, oh, now I'm going to be best friends with Shimei. No, he just says, it's not worth me getting distracted by killing somebody on a day like this when that guy is no threat to me at all. Ultimately, in our lives, there are going to be people who attack us. Whether or not we move forward will sometimes have to do with whether or not we get distracted with fighting battles with weasels or whether we decide, nope, not going to go there. That's not worth it. So he did that, and I think sometimes for many of us to move forward, we need to know how to just decide that some people just aren't worth it. They're not worth talking it out, having an open conversation, going to counseling together. Sometimes it's like, you know what? Sorry, I have a race to run, and I'm not going to let you get in my way. And so that's kind of the way he dealt with Shimei. Then Mephibosheth comes along. Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son, who, remember, had been disabled when they were running, when the war was happening, when Saul and his dad Jonathan ended up getting killed. And David had met up with him, tried to bless him, told him, hey, I'm going to give you your grandpa's, all his property is now yours. I'll sign it over to you. This guy Ziba, your servant, will help you manage it. And then you're welcome to come and have dinner with me anytime you want. And then while David was chased out of town by Absalom and he's out in the wilderness, Mephibosheth's servant Ziba comes to him with a bunch of stuff. And David's like, where's Mephibosheth? And he goes, well, he pretty much stayed in Jerusalem and he's kind of backing, you know, your son Absalom. Sorry, but I'm here with you. So now, David's like, wow, that hurts. But so now here's Mephibosheth. David runs into him and he's like, hey, Mephibosheth, where have you been? And he's like, oh, that was a misunderstanding. Ziba lied to you. He had told me that, you know, he was going to go and tell you I'm totally with him. And then he told you that I'm against him. No, a total misunderstanding. Here's an opportunity for David to get sidetracked into trying to, again, decide who's right, who's wrong. Mephibosheth, Ziba. People still wonder, I don't know if Ziba was lying or telling the truth. I don't think David knew if, you know, Mephibosheth is like, no, I love you, I love you, I love you. Then look what David said to him was, tell you what, I don't have time for this. And so he said, you guys can split the stuff in verse 29. Why do you speak any more of your matters? I'm not interested in your problems, personal problems. I have said, you and Ziba divide the land. Mephibosheth's like, no, he can have it all. Something about this story doesn't add up. But you know what? In life, there are all kinds of issues that don't add up. And we have to decide, am I going to get distracted into trying to solve somebody else's problems? Or am I going to stay on course for what God has called me to do? And so David leaves us wondering about what's the deal with Ziba and Mephibosheth. He doesn't take a stand. And I think sometimes in our lives, when we see people who, there are these disputes, well, there's this guy, or there's an election, or there's this or that, there's this side, there's that side, like, okay, I need to solve this. No, you don't. Just move past it. You have more important things to do. God has more important callings on your life than for you to be the peacemaker of the world between people who can't get along. And sometimes you just have to say, you settle it. Good parents understand this at some point, that they can't constantly be the referee when their kids are fighting amongst themselves. Sometimes you just have to say, you guys go and settle this on your own, and neither one of you is coming out of the room until you tell me that you have a solution. Because it isn't always my job to be the judge in every circumstance. Now, there may be somebody right and somebody wrong. Of course there is. There's always different perspectives. But David had a race to run. And so he's like, guys, just cut the baby in half, deal with it. I'm moving on. So he heads out again. And then this guy, Barzillai, the Gileadite, comes along. He's not even Jewish. But he was a rich guy who had been helping David and his men when he had run away and headed out into the wilderness. This guy was feeding them and giving them places to stay and everything. So now here he is as David's ready to cross the Jordan, and David stops. And, you know, this guy was very aged at 80. So if you're 80, you're very aged. And I'm going to be 70 this year, and I'm like, there's nobody that thinks 70 is not old. Man, I am old. And so I relate to this guy for sure, especially when he says, I can't taste my food anymore. I can't, you know. But anyway, and he had helped the king with possessions. He was very rich. And the king said to Barzillai in verse 33, come across with me and I will provide for you while you're with me in Jerusalem. He's like, come on, you can move in and I'll give you a little senior's apartment over here and take care of you. And Barzillai, I love this, he goes, how long am I going to live anyway? Why do I want to go to Jerusalem? I'm 80 years old. You understand? Can I discern between the good and bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? So he goes, you just go on. And David's like, okay. But then he expressed his gratitude to him, and he took one of his guys and said, let him come, and I'll give him whatever he wants because I really owe you. And the king kissed Barzillai in verse 39 and blessed him, and he returned to his own place. Now, David didn't take the time to deal with Shimei. David didn't take the time to deal with Mephibosheth and Ziba. But now he takes the time for this old codger who had helped him. And it seemed like, yeah, David knew right where he was going, but this was special to him. And I would suggest to you that it's never a waste of time to say thank you to someone who has been there for you. That is not a distraction. That's at the core of who we are. So I don't want to spend my energy solving other people's problems. I don't want to spend my energy trying to listen to somebody explain, but I better. When I'm moving, I better be willing to stop and say thank you to people who have really encouraged me, who have really been there for me. See, when you say thank you, it blesses the person who blessed you, which is good, but it also does something to you. In all of the studies that say what's good for people, always at near the top of the list of what makes you more healthy is that you're thankful, because it causes you to think about the fact that you've been blessed in a lot of ways in life. And so David doesn't have the time to get involved in arguments or debates, but he has the time to go way out of his way to have a lengthy conversation with an old guy, where the way this probably really went down, David's saying it and Barzillai's, what? And you know, he's like communicating with him because he really appreciated him. And that's for us. If we can't get to the point where we sometimes think, who got me here? Who helped me? Who encouraged me? And we take the time to express that. It's a huge part of going from when you're stuck to going from where you're going where you're actually going to go. So then David moves on and goes to Gilgal, and all the people of Judah escorted the king and a bunch of the people from the 10 northern tribes. Then you see another squabble between people from Judah and the people from the 10 northern tribes arguing over who loves David more, and David just ignores it completely. And he goes on and you know, he moves forward, and Israel and Judah are arguing, and he doesn't say a word. He's like, you don't have any share in me. I have a race to run. I'm going somewhere. I am moving forward. And he heads back toward the palace in Jerusalem. He lets them argue. And a lot of times when we see arguments, you don't need to jump into it. It'll all cancel itself out in the end. You don't need to weigh in. See, every moment that you spend debating, like social media is great for this. Like everybody has an opinion on everything. Well, you know what happened while you were wasting your time arguing about something that you don't know anything about? That was time that could have been spent doing what God has called you to do, and instead you're off here running around chasing down things and you know, getting involved in arguments. David didn't do that. He understood. He had somewhere to go. He had a person that he was supposed to be, and he followed that agenda all the way down the road toward Jerusalem. And this, ultimately, this story is the story that prefigures Jesus, who, a little less than 1,000 years later, Jesus, the son of David, would come to this same road, the pathway into Jerusalem. And he would come, and people were, yay, cheering. And then there were other people who were criticizing and arguing. And there he is, heading to Jerusalem to prepare the way. Ultimately, he'd be there for a few days, teach his disciples some of the most important things ever. Then he would leave up that road one more time. And on Good Friday, he would head down that road, being driven along by the Roman soldiers. And he would never go down that path again until the day comes in the future when his feet touch down on the Mount of Olives at the second coming, and he once again moves down that same road, David's road to Jerusalem, down through the from the Mount of Olives and past Gethsemane and into Jerusalem, where he then takes his throne. And so what we see here in this chapter is the beginning of, it's the precursor of, the kind of focus that shows, I know where I'm going, and I know what I'm supposed to do, and nothing is going to sway me from that. And that's, to me, what we ought to be thinking about in our lives. We can just be stuck. We can just feel sorry for ourselves. Wham, wham, I'm a victim. Or we can let somebody slap us around, or we can do it to ourselves and go, listen, life is short. It happens one day at a time. Every day you spend sitting here is a day that you're not moving forward in what God has called you to. Now get going, and don't get distracted by people who have hurt you. Find your friends, connect with people, and then move forward down that path. Be grateful, but don't be distracted, because you have a job to do. And to me, that's what David tells us. That's what Jesus tells us. And when I think of Jesus going down that road on Palm Sunday, I think he had to have been aware David went down the same road. And people were arguing over him, and really very few people that really understood who he was or what he was doing. They were fighting over him. And Jesus is like, that's what they're doing to me. You got people yelling this and people yelling that, and they're like, Hosanna, save now. Like, this is when I'm going to start my kingdom. And he's like, misunderstood. But he had a path he needed to walk, and he did that on that Palm Sunday. And we can be grateful that he did. But when we think of that road, we need to realize, I am on my road too. Have I got stuck? Have I got bogged down? Am I finding myself just not making progress? Because every day that's stagnant is a day that keeps me short of where I'm really supposed to be going. So I got to keep moving. I know life is hard. Go ahead and have a little cry. But, you know, you can cry while you're moving too. And if you have people in your life who can tell you, come on, shake it off. Those kind of people drive you crazy. You'll want to fire them just like David did with Job. But you need those kind of voices. You need somebody who will call you to that. You have a higher calling than what you're settling for right now. Keep moving. Stay focused. Because David did this, then Jesus was able to do this. And as a result, we have Holy Week, where we see Jesus who, as he went down that path, he looked at Jerusalem and cried. And he said, oh, man, I wanted to gather you, and you guys wouldn't. But I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And that's his truth, and that's our calling as well. And we're going to celebrate. It's the first Sunday of the month, so we're going to celebrate communion. And communion was a little thing that Jesus left them. After Palm Sunday, they went down and got a room, and right away, he told them, I'm going to break this bread. It's my body. It's broken for you. I'm going to give you this cup. It's my blood that was shed for you. I want you to remember that this is what the path looks like. Bodies are going to be broken. Blood is going to be shed. But when you do this together, you realize that you're connected to something way bigger and more important than you. You are on the path. The path looks like this sometimes. But I want you to embrace it, because Jesus would say, basically, we are never closer than when we are suffering. And you are never closer to others than when you are suffering together. And that's why the imagery of communion is that we are coming together to remember the suffering, to remember that when we were called to take up our cross and follow him. Amazing that that's where the meaning to life is actually discovered as well. Not in doing what I want to do, but in submitting myself to him. And so we always need to celebrate communion, because it reminds us of that truth. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this beautiful story in 2 Samuel 19 that could have been lost for all time, but you preserved it so that when Palm Sunday came along, we had a context. We saw how David went from being stuck to being enthroned. And we understand that you followed that model in a powerful way, and then you call us to do the same. Thank you for loving us enough to allow your body to be broken, your blood to be shed. And we will always celebrate that, because at its essence, that reminds us of how much you love us and of how much meaning you can put into our lives as we connect with each other under that same truth. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.